favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
Peanut butter ramen?
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck's peanut butter ramen?
Okay. I'm about to rock your world, okay? Okay, you take ramen.
Okay.
Like, just, like, regular, just, like, whatever, like, ramen packet you have laying around.
Mm-hmm. I have packets.
Oh, yeah.
All over the floor, all the time.
You know what... Okay. And...
You walk in my apartment, it's just crunchy.
Just powder everywhere.
Oh, no, not tonkatsu flavor.
Sodium. And... It's peanut butter, a little bit of brown sugar if you have it. It's not, like, super essential.
Plenty of brown sugar over here. You tell me. Keep going. I've learned the recipe. A
little bit of brown sugar,
soy
sauce, and, a shit ton of sriracha.
Mmm.
You mix that all together, and then you add, the ramen water, and then make it into, a sauce kind of thing, and you put that over ramen and, a fried egg over it and some sesame seeds.
That all sounds fucking amazing.
It's really good.
Okay.
It's one of my struggle meals, but it's really good.
Damn.
Because it comes together in 5 minutes.
Is there a sufficient sriracha substitute? Because I normally don't have sriracha. I have all the Mexican shit.
Oh.
Because on account of the brown sugar, obviously.
Right, yeah. Right. No, I exclusively have sriracha because I put that shit on everything.
Oh, see. I do love me some sriracha, but I got addicted to fucking my girl Cholula. So,
Girl Cholula.
My girl Cholula. She's great.
Moving on. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is the flood of nudes receiving Anthony Fuentes.
Man, now that I think about it, it's been a very good couple of years.
Anyway.
That's not... No ideas. Don't do that. I am stranger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No nudes, please.
I'll make fun of you.
Yeah.
I've done it, and I will continue, and I will do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not you, Anthony, obviously.
Yeah.
I do that anyway. But anyway, welcome to October.
Mm.
We're here.
Oh, fuck, it's October.
It's October. This is Halloween.
Oh, shit, we were
Halloween.
So excited last week. That's right, I forgot about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, welcome to October. We were supposed to have a guest this week. Sad face.
I forgot about that, too. Wow, right, and that was only
mere days ago.
Yeah, wow. What is happening here? You know what? We just got back from Horror Nights, so...
We did.
Yeah,
I sprained my knee.
Mm-hmm. No, she's falling apart. I'm doing great.
Thank you.
I'll be sure to summon your ghost later on, you know?
Allah.
Yeah.
That's actually one of the questions.
I'm someone needs a heckling. Senator Webster, let's go.
Someone needs to be heckled. We are talking about, in case you couldn't have picked it up at this point, or if you just simply read the title of the episode you clicked on.
Yeah.
We're talking about Sleepy Hollow from good old 1999.
Oh, my. Is it 99?
99.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, what a time.
I mean, it literally got in at the very, very end of 99. Mm-hmm. It was November
of
99.
That's what I'm trying to think here, because I remember watching this a lot. As a ute, definitely.
But kicking it off is Anthony again this week.
Oh, cool. Kicking off October with a good old IMDb, which tells us that Ichabod Crane is sent to Sleepy Hollow to investigate the decapitations of three people, with the culprit being the legendary apparition, the Headless Horseman.
Ooh.
Surprisingly succinct, IMDb. Way to not fuck up one time.
Yeah, two commas.
That's it? Two commas?
Amazing.
And they both lead into each other organically? Oh, my
Beautiful.
Lord. Now, this is actually directed by podcast favorite here, Mr. Tim Burton.
Woo.
Probably received so many nudes. And screenplay by Andrew Kevin Walker. Sorry, make myself laugh. I'm a little high, too. This is great. So, the story is by Kevin Yeager, cool name, and Andrew Kevin Walker. And it's based on The Legend of Sleepy Hollow by Washington Irving. So, pretty cool.
Baller name.
I agree. This stars this fucking hodgepodge of just 90s and Harry Potter alumni all in one fucking thing.
I mean, this is pre-Harry Potter.
Yeah.
So it's not even Harry Potter alumni.
No, the prelude to Potter. But only by like a year or two. Like a year and a half.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, November. Two years. Yeah. So this is starring Johnny Depp, Christina Ricci, Miranda Richardson, Michael Gambon, Casper Van Dien, favorite Mr. fucking Johnny Rico himself. Woo! And Jeffrey Jones, and of course the legendary motherfucking Christopher Lee.
Yes.
Saruman himself.
Hell yeah.
What a fucking cast this movie. Oh my god.
It is a loaded cast. I didn't remember until I was watching it. I was like, oh yeah, he's in it. Oh yeah, he's in it. Holy shit, I forgot. Christopher Lee's in this shit. Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, that Dursley piece of shit, get him.
Yeah.
Get him. Oh, great. This was released on November 17th, 1999 in the Chinese theater premiere, Man's Chinese Theater. Legendary landmark of appropriation in good old Los Angeles. And we walked by it. And, of course, it released at a wide release on November 19th, 1999. That is a lot of nines. Now, its budget was very high. At $70 million. They were just giving... They're just throwing dollars at Burton, dude.
Yeah, at this point, and we're going to talk about it later, but this is his eighth studio film.
I mean, fuck, dude.
So at this point...
The formula's down.
Yeah. And it's also after... I mean, sure, they're a little, like, pissed at him because of Batman Returns.
But it's still a good movie.
It's still a good movie. But, like, at this point, like, they know his vibe. Yeah. And they know that he turns out absolute fucking bangers at this point. Because he has some gravitas.
They're like, as long as we pair him with Depp, we're going to get some good shit.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Box office, of course, was a monumental $207 million. So they definitely went multiple times their budget on that one.
Of course.
All right.
So,
oh, but
now,
yeah, let's go. Transition. We got this.
We gotta dive into the legend of Sleepy Hollow itself. I'm also a little high.
Yeah.
So.
You got higher during the read for sure.
Yeah, you just saw my eyes.
I saw the gradual shift there. Boy, October, ladies and gentlemen, let's go.
Starting it out on a high note, no pun intended.
I like this version of Webster. Look at how punny you are in these circumstances.
Oh no.
That'd be great.
Anyway, every year around Halloween, a tale emerges.
Mm.
Washington Irving's 1820 tale of a headless horseman who terrorizes the real-life village of Sleepy Hollow is considered one of America's very first ghost stories.
It feels American as fuck, too.
Yeah.
There's something about it.
I mean, like... Sleepy Hollow, New York, I think. It's like, our friend Caitlin, hi Caitlin, has gone a couple times and like it just looked whimsical as fuck.
Mm. We need more whimsy, yeah.
We do, especially in California.
Mm-hmm. Just beaches, my God. Nothing but beaches and good air. Ugh.
God. Anyway, but for those of you who don't know, Irving didn't invent this idea of a weird headless specter writer.
Oh, shit.
Tales of headless horsemen can be traced all the way back to the Middle Ages, including stories from the Brothers Grimm, the Dutch, and the Irish legend of the Dahollan.
Dahollan?
Yeah. I don't know if... I'm sure James is listening and maybe correcting my pronunciation there, but...
Dullahan?
Dullahan? Oh, yeah. Dullahan. Yep.
Okay, that's... I don't know. We don't know.
We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
A Grim Reaper-like rider who carries his own head, which I think is fun.
And not many people know this, but his head looks a lot like Nicolas Cage. Yeah. Yeah, it's very close.
Is he a light? Is he a flame as well?
He's got a really fast horse.
God damn it.
Metal-plated horse, you know.
Anyway, historians
very dismissive. That was great.
Think that Irving pulled inspiration for Sleepy Hollow from Slur.
Slur, okay. From that piece of shit over there.
From Sir Walter Scott's 1796 The Chase, which is a translation from a German poem, The Wild Huntsman, by Gottfried Berger, and is likely based on Norse mythology.
It's a series of European-ass names. Jesus.
I did not anticipate my current state when I wrote this.
Walter Scott's. Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah.
All right, well, and then we get the most American-ass name, Washington Irving.
Yeah. Irving's story takes place, of course, in the New York village of Sleepy Hollow in Westchester County.
Oh, sure.
In it, lanky newcomer and schoolmaster Ichabod Crane courts Katrina Van Tassel, a young heiress who is also being pursued by the Dutchman Brom Bones.
Interesting note. I have also done social media for a realtor in
Sleepy Hollow?
Westchester.
Oh.
Yeah.
Westchester. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
After being rebuffed by Katrina at a party at the Van Tassel farm where ghost stories are shared, Ichabod is then chased by a headless horseman who may or may not be his rival? Question mark. Ichabod hurls a pumpkin at the man, throwing Ichabod from his horse. The schoolmaster vanishes. Are you scared yet?
Oh my god. Yeah, these centuries old tales just...
Ooh, spooky!
Look at the goosebumps.
Huh? Oh my god.
Huh? That's not a skin condition.
Some scared brown sugar.
Yeah. That's a good one. Now I gotta keep the ramen bit.
Oh yeah, I always go at least back to the ramen.
Yeah, we're gonna go back. Yeah, if you hear a hard cut before we even introduce the title, it's for that one joke right
there.
There's
like 6 minutes of prelude.
Yes.
Historians and scholars continue to speculate what Irving was, quote, trying to accomplish with Sleepy Hollow, and what the headless horseman represented, citing everything from yellow fever to the inability to escape one's past.
Oh boy.
Okay. Literature's funny like that.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Bradley, a historian at historic Hudson Valley, says of the legend, quote, "It inspires people because it reminds them that there are still some American mysteries, some half-truths that may never be fully known. And that's the whole point," she says, saying, quote, "The legend lends itself to any interpretation, and it continues to fascinate and terrify us in the best possible way," unquote.
Okay, well, Robert Eggers would do a great, like, Sleepy Hollow.
Ooh!
Right?
Yeah,
I don't know why.
He does like his American tales.
Yeah, but the way she described all that stuff, too, I was like, oh, yeah, she's describing, like, Robert Eggers shit. Okay.
Yeah. Well, also, I would say Eggers is very, like, if a college essay became a horror film.
Yes, yes. And the best photographer in the class wrote it.
Exactly. Like, and I mean that as a compliment, 100%.
Oh, absolutely. Like, yeah.
But, and this historian very much, it reads like a college essay. So mm-hmm. I think that's where the line is being drawn.
Interesting.
So, also, you know, I don't know. I can see it, though. Mm-hmm. I want to see that movie now. Damn it.
I know.
So.
The flame effects alone would be non-CG. It'll be great. That's who he is. That's who he is.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, as legends are wont to do, the legend of Sleepy Hollow has evolved itself over the years and has manifested time and time again in popular culture. But we're here to discuss a particular adaptation.
Oh, a particularly good adaptation. This is a really good one.
Yes.
I like this, yeah.
Of course.
let me get some water. So, in 1993, Kevin Yeager, a makeup effects designer who had turned to directing Tales from the Crypt, he had an idea. And that idea was adapting the aforementioned Washington Irving's short story, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, into, of course, a full feature film. Now, primed with this idea through his agent, Yeager was introduced to Andrew Kevin Walker, the screenwriter for, of course, Seven, which we haven't covered yet, but have promised several people to do so.
We will.
Over, like, 3 years.
Yes, we will. I promise.
One day.
I fucking love that movie. I promise.
One day.
He's also a super well-known script doctor. He was the script doctor for Fight Club as well.
He's a David Fincher boy, huh?
Yeah. I think he's also done a couple other stuff, so.
Nice. Way to go, Andrew Kevin Walker. So, the duo spent a few months working on a film treatment that transformed Ichabod Crane from a schoolmaster from Connecticut to a banished New York City detective. Ooh, CSI Sleepy Hollow.
You know, it's funny you say that because there's the TV show.
What?
Sleepy Hollow.
I have no idea about the TV show.
It's pretty much like a police procedural, but with supernatural elements.
Oh, shit.
But it's like Ichabod Crane.
Is it good?
The first couple seasons are.
Okay, cool. I just stumbled on this idea, so this is perfect.
So when you said CSI, like, I was just like, oh, they actually did do that show.
By the by.
They did that.
Oh, that's great. Okay, I'll check out, maybe an episode or so. We'll see. Well, that's good. That's good stuff to know. All right. But of course, Yeager and Walker subsequently pitched Sleepy Hollow to various studios and production companies, eventually securing a deal with producer Scott Rudin, who had been impressed with Walker's unproduced spec script for 7. So, I mean, that is a lot of talent there, though.
Totally.
Yeah, these guys are on it. So Rudin optioned the project to Paramount Pictures in a deal that had Yeager set to direct, with Walker scripting. The pair would, of course, share a story credit. Now, following the completion of Hellraiser Bloodline, which I'm sure Phil just watched recently, didn't he?
Bloodline is not
number 2?
It could be. Yeah, I think you're right.
Okay. Well, Yeager had planned Sleepy Hollow as a low-budget production, calling it, quote, a pretentious slasher film with a spectacular murder every 5 minutes or so. Really selling your movie there. However, Paramount disagreed on the concept and demoted Yeager's involvement to prosthetic makeup designer.
Yeah, he got fucked.
Oh, it's like, that's so mean. It's like, hey, you can still work on this passion project, but you're going to get bossed the fuck around.
Mm-hmm. I also want to mention, while they're like kind of shopping this around, the movie, I think when it did initially get... when Paramount purchased it, it was put into development hell for, like, months.
That's the kind of move you make when you're like, they're not fucking moving. Like, yeah. Oh, shit.
And then he got demoted to prosthetic makeup designer.
Oh, that hurt to read. Wow.
Doesn't that suck?
That sucks.
He got steamrolled, dude.
Listen, you ain't shit, but here's some prompts.
Here's something you can do. Yeah. Here.
The one thing we think you're competent at. Right. Don't fuck this up.
Lick
don't
fuck my this boot. Up.
Jesus. Well, okay, we're going to read this quote. They never really saw it as a commercial movie, said producer Adam Schroeder.
Schroeder.
Okay.
I have an uncle named with that last name, so.
Oh, okay. There you go. Schroeder. Okay, so, quote, the studio thinks old literary classic, and they think The Crucible. We started developing it before horror movies came back. Unquote. Oh, you were just shy of Scream, baby.
Mm-mm. So close. Yet so far.
Yep. So Paramount CEO Sherry Lansing revived studio interest in, of course, 1998. Very, very good year. Schroeder, who shepherded Tim Burton's Edward Scissorhands as a studio executive at good old 20th Century Fox back in 1990. Man, we covered that one. Very good movie.
Yes.
Suggested that Burton direct Sleepy Hollow. Oh, yeah. See our episode on Edward Scissorhands for more about Sherry. Yes, that's right. Great. We are lit. Anyways, Francis Ford Coppola was affiliated with the production as a producer, but his limited association came from American Zoetrope, his production company. Now, Burton, coming off the troubled production of Superman Lives, which has such an amazing development hell story.
Really?
That's going to be one of those summer ones I might want to do, because holy, it's fucked. It's awesome. There's a documentary.
About the production?
About the production.
Wow, that's nuts.
Yes, very, very good. Now, there he goes. Burton was hired to direct in June of 1998, and Burton only became aware of Coppola's involvement during the editing process when he was sent a copy of Sleepy Hollow's trailer and saw Coppola's name on that bitch.
Imagine how fucking bonkers that must be. Like, yeah. A movie that you're directing, and you're just like, oh, I had no idea this man was affiliated with it.
And he has his hands in everything.
Coppola?
No, Burton.
Oh.
He's up and down. This is his baby, and it's like, yeah. Who the fuck's this asshole slapping their name on my shit?
Right.
The director of The Godfather. Okay.
Oh, fine.
Yeah, okay, all right, whatever. Fucking summer tickets.
Whatever.
Anyways, so on directing Sleepy Hollow, Burton says, quote, I had never really done something that was more of a horror film.
False.
Yeah. Batman Returns, baby. And it's funny, because those are the kind of movies that I like probably more than any other genre. We're with you, buddy. I'm with you on that one. Mm-hmm. We kind of established the whole creative output on that. So, when it came to his directing style, Burton wanted Sleepy Hollow to feel like an homage to Hammer film productions like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And I'm pretty sure the Hammer film stuff, we talk about that, 13 Ghosts.
Do we?
Yeah, because all those old movies, it was a remake of like an old movie.
Oh, yeah.
We've covered a lot on here, Webster.
Wow.
I know. Our output's pretty insane. We love horror that movies too, Mr. Burton.
That was like two steps away from an Anna Faris wow. I know, right? That was really close.
Oh, there's something I was watching recently that like with Anna Faris. What was it? Fuck. It was a clip from Scary Movie 3.
Oh, okay.
But it was like she was saying some shit that in Scary Movie 3 that would not fly today. It was like in a compilation.
It was like very, it was not okay.
It was very like, that's some racist shit.
Oh no.
But it was played so genuinely and so like about racism, but not actually, it was weird. But I'm like, you still can't really write that scene anymore.
No.
Like that's gone. Oh, we got a couple more scary movies.
Yes, absolutely.
Anyways, so while Johnny Depp was Burton's first choice for the role of Ichabod Crane.
Of course.
Paramount required him to consider Brad Pitt, Liam Neeson, and Daniel Day-Lewis.
Okay, out of those three, if it wasn't Johnny Depp.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Interesting.
Brad Pitt, I'd see too. Brad Pitt, he's just Brad Pitt.
He's just, yeah.
He's more swarmy.
Yeah. Kind
of like Ichabod
Crane. He would have been Casper Van Dien's character.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, that would have been great with him and Johnny Depp. Liam Neeson, I feel... Too old.
I was going to say, what did Liam Neeson... No, because this is right after Star Wars. Yeah,
Star Wars. He looks like an older man in that one.
He doesn't look like an old man. I mean, he's older, but he's not like an old man.
No, but I think Johnny Depp's youthfulness kind of adds to the character here. And Liam Neeson in this era is outside of that.
So and so Daniel Day-Lewis is...
Oh, only because Daniel Day-Lewis is batshit. And he's going to live as this murderous detective Ichabod Crane.
That's funny.
We're going to get insane production stories with his ass.
Okay.
And it's going to be like nothing you've ever seen.
Okay.
Yeah, so
okay.
Daniel Day-Lewis would like actually dissect a body on set. Yeah, and immediately come back all bloody. He's like, do the sink! Like, that's it. Yeah, that's good. Andy Lewis.
Okay.
For the chaos. Okay. It's for the chaos, Alex. How about you? What do you think?
Well, now that, I mean, I was going to say Liam Neeson, but...
What's a good reason for Liam Neeson?
I was just thinking about episode one, because that's going to come up later, too.
Oh, okay.
This is connected to fucking episode one.
You're like, he's the closest name that I remember from another circumstance.
No,
bam.
No, that's not my actual reason. Honestly, I hadn't really thought about it. I just think Johnny Depp and freaking Tim Burton go together like peanut butter and jelly at this point. Like, it's kind of hard to dissever them.
Yeah. And, you know, I could have actually just said Liam Neeson because he has black hair. That's it. That I think about it. I'm like, but also he kind of just has black hair and he's pale as shit. There we go. Bam.
Done.
Yeah.
Ewan McGregor. Done.
Oh, there you go. I like it.
If we're going to go full fucking psycho about it.
Oh, it's great. Anyways, so Depp was officially cast in July of 1988 for his third collaboration with good old Mr. Burton. That would be the previous ones were Edward Scissorhands and Ed Wood, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Correct.
The actor wanted Ichabod Crane to parallel Irving's description of a character in the short story. This included a prolonged prosthetic snipe nose, huge ears, and elongated fingers. Okay, I just thought he looked like Johnny Depp. So Paramount wanted someone hot and turned down his suggestions. Oh, interesting. Okay.
They're like, we're going to make you look like a bent fucking weirdo. And then he's just like, no.
No, that's not
possible. No, you're young and hot. Yeah. Uh-huh. We're going to use that. We need that for the promotional images.
Exactly. I want some weird ass fucking snipe nose Johnny Depp right there next to Christina Ricci looking normal. Nah.
Right, exactly. Like, that's not believable.
We need somebody that people are going to think is fuckable and can solve crimes. That's it. You can't have just one.
Hey, and you're fuckable and can solve crimes. They saw that on 21 Jump Street, so... See?
Exactly. We did not give you $70 million for the fucking snipe nose.
It's a really expensive nose.
No, horrible. That's $10 million right there. Anyway, so now Sleepy Hollow, of course, was ready to film. So the original intention had been to shoot Sleepy Hollow predominantly on location with a $30 billion budget, which is still pretty respectable. Again, but still far lower than the final 70 mil. Now, when scouting for a location, nothing in New England really hit the mark. So Burton, having filmed Batman in Britain, suggested filming there. And designers from Batman were brought on to help as well, some of which we saw at Batman Returns live screening this summer. Oh, you didn't go to that, huh? Did you go to
that? Wait, what? Oh, no, I didn't. I could not go. Oh, God. I was in San Diego. God. I could not go.
Damn it. We met these guys. These guys are fucking insane.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were there.
That's cool.
The screening was for them. It was really cool. Like, I got a lot of cool Burton stories. May share one of these days. So, of course, because of all the location scouting, filming was pushed from early October to November 20th, 1998. To a studio that had been recently vacated by Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. You're welcome. Damn, she did bring it back.
Oh, and it comes up yet again.
Oh, I
later.
Bet. I bet. Liam Neeson somehow wants to walk here.
You know, it sucks because, and I didn't say this because I was pretty high about 20 minutes ago when we first started recording, but the guest who was supposed to be on was Japes. And that's part of the reason that I kind of shoehorned all these Star Wars prequel stuff in there.
No.
So I could have been like,
you missed out. Here I am just accepting your love with the prequels without criticism.
I know. Oh. I'm not getting like completely, yeah.
I could already hear James like, yeah, I'm like, fine.
Great.
Get better, James.
I know.
Yeah, feel better. Anyways. <Ooh. laughs> Oh, that's so funny. I imagine, though, in the scenario of Liam Neeson was also Ichabod Crane, it'd be like the people, like, don't even change the name of the parking spot. He's going to come back in, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's coming back.
It's just fine. Vacated. He's, yeah.
He'll be back.
Mr. Neeson, here you go.
Yeah, he's just not wearing a wig this time.
Yeah. Different wig. Anyways, the majority of the filming took place, of course, at that sound studio in England. Production then moved to the Calden Faw Estate in Hambledon for a month-long shoot in March, where the town of Sleepy Hollow was, of course, constructed.
English names are fucking ridiculous.
Telling an American-ass story, too.
Calden Faw Estate. I know, I did notice the irony in that, and that's kind of part of the reason why I was just like, we have to talk about this.
We talk about British shit, yeah.
Hambledon? Fucking Hambledon?
Hambledon doesn't... It sounds like a place for the poors. I don't know. Like, it just does. That's some, like, Oliver Twist shit right there.
But here's the thing. Calden Faw Estate does not.
No, you're right. You're right.
That sounds like where, like, there's, like, urinals made out of, like, solid gold.
That's the hill where you look down on the poors.
Like Anaheim Hills.
Yes, like Anaheim Hills. Yeah. And then generally the rest of Hambledon is Santa Ana.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
My hometown. So, yes. So, I'm very familiar
with the
poors.
I'm picking up what you're putting down. I've been here long enough. I get it.
California. All right.
California.
Anyways, so we came, quote, my God, let me get myself put together. Okay, cool. Quotes. We came to England figuring we would find a perfect little town, producer Adam Schroeder recalled. And then we had to build it anyway. Filming in Britain continued all throughout April.
Meanwhile, in order to pull off the special effects envisioned for the film, Tim Burton enlisted the help of Rick Heinrichs, who he worked with on Superman Lives.
Man, that's... Yeah.
He just pulled, like, he literally was just like, hey, you want a job? Hey, you want a job? Hey, you want a job?
I know none of this shit worked out, but... I got a new gig for us. It's gig time, baby.
Right. The production design was, again, influenced by the previously mentioned Hammer Film Productions and particularly the giallo film Black Sunday from 1960.
Oh.
Particularly the supernatural feel evoked as a result from being filmed primarily on sound stages.
Do we have to cover Black Sunday now? That sounds interesting.
We could.
It's probably on the shutter, the slash sticks when
you
put it on.
I'm sure. It's on something. Mm-hmm. Heinrichs was also influenced by American colonial architecture, the German Expressionism.
Burton.
And Dr. Seuss illustrations.
Oh, that's interesting.
I can see that, though.
That's a nice influence right there. Okay.
Sure. The majority of Sleepy Hollow's 150 visual effects shots were handled by Industrial Light and Magic, ILM, while Kevin Yeager, bless that poor bastard, supervised the human and creature effects.
Every time you paint, like,
I know. But hey, to be fair, the human and creature effects look pretty fucking good.
Oh, he had to blow their tits up. He was like, oh yeah, you guys want to fucking fire me?
You're not gonna let me direct it?
Yeah, here. How about this looks as good as it can possibly look? How about that? Yeah, that came from his imagination? Yeah, the whole fucking thing, right? Still drinking his beer.
I know, still pissed. Shows up to work drunk. Mm-hmm. In part, a reaction to the computer-generated effects in Mars Attacks, Burton opted to use them in a limited amount and just use them as little as possible.
Yeah, they don't hold up that well.
But I want to cover Mars Attacks so bad.
Oh, I think it's a great movie for us to cover for sure. But I saw that one in theaters also.
I haven't seen it in years. I have no idea if it holds up or not.
I remember thinking in theaters, I was like, that looks fake as fuck.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Like, you saw it in theaters?
Not even. I was a kid, yeah. But I remember it was like, yeah, holy shit, that doesn't even look like video games. Like,
wait. When you were like 9, 10?
Probably around that age, yeah.
Because I'm like, wait, Mars Attacks came out in like 97?
Uh-huh. I've been going to theaters since Jurassic Park.
You went to go see, I get that. But then I remembered your family and I was like, they took you to go see Mars Attacks when you were like 9?
Oh, my mom really wanted to watch it. We watched the movies they wanted to watch. They were like, yeah, no babysitter, just we'll share one popcorn and two fat sodas.
Hey, that is the life. And then all get the little trays and you disperse the popcorn.
You know what's crazy to think about though? It's like, I was the oldest in watching those. My younger siblings were there too. So they got to see all these crazy ass movies at an even more malleable age.
Because I was like thinking about me for this. I'm like, I'm 3. I'm not seeing this shit.
No, I think my sister was 3. My brother was like 6? Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, we're all watching Mars Attacks. It was great.
Aww.
See, 98.
Good year.
Good year.
So, the windmill in the film, it was a particularly fun effect for the production. The feature included a 60-foot-tall forced perspective exterior visible to highway travelers miles away, a base on a rooftop set, and in a quarter-scale miniature.
Damn.
They were just like, we're going to build it.
We're going to build the fuck out of this windmill.
The interior of the mill, which was about 30 feet high and 25 feet wide, featured wooden gears equipped with mechanisms for grinding flour. Oh. Because if there's nothing Tim Burton loves, it's a fucking mechanism.
I was thinking too. I was like, I gotta throw a mechanism in the joke. Oh, you got it. Perfect. Didn't even need the layup.
Nope. Set and spiked, my friend.
Grind that fucking flour,
goddammit. A wider view of the windmill was rendered on a Levsden soundstage set with a quarter-scale windmill complete with rotating vanes, painted sky backdrop, and special effects fire.
Ooh.
Quote from Heinrich saying, it was scary for the actors who were here having burning wood explode at them.
Yeah, that'd be freaky as fuck.
Whatever. Get back out there. There were controls in place and people standing by with hoses, of course, but there's always a chance of something going wrong, I think is a hilarious thing to be quoted on.
That's
saying.
The visual in my mind is like just a freaked out Johnny Depp about to piss himself, and then a bunch of like firemen like, it's
just
okay.
Just people standing there with hoses, and for some reason, I know this is in 1998, but because this takes place in like 1890 or whatever the fuck, I'm just imagining ye olde like firemen with like the stupid hoses.
They also have to be in costume. They're like, we gotta really feel the vibe here.
This is an immersive set. Everyone has to be in character, and it's just the people with like ye olde hoses. They have buckets.
That's why they were able to get away with it, because they had to give Tim Burton the powers of like an actual lord.
Exactly.
Like whatever he says goes.
Oh yeah, yeah. Actor Ian McDiarmid, who portrayed Dr. Lancaster, had just finished another Leviston production with Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace.
Oh, shit.
That's it.
Yeah, there you go. Right. Dan, James should have been right fucking there.
He compared the aesthetics of the two films, saying that the physical sets helped the actors get into a natural frame of mind, saying, quote, having come from the blue screen world of Star Wars, it was wonderful to see gigantic, beautifully made perspective sets and wonderful clothes, and also people recreating a world. It's like the way movies used to be done.
Oh, he's unquote. Like... And those wonderful firemen just keeping us all safe on set.
Just keeping us all safe with their buckets.
They're not even the hoses.
It's buckets.
Buckets on standby. It's okay, the water's kind of old. You can change it out. Like,
well, it's cold water because, you know, that puts fires out faster. Mm-hmm. That is a joke. I know how fires work. I know that that's not how it works.
It's Arctic water. Let's do it.
If we just bring water from the Arctic, we'll just kill all the fires.
Oh, anyway, so to promote Sleepy Hollow, Paramount Pictures featured the film's trailer at San Diego Comic-Con International in August 1999, which has to be... I didn't even know it was out then. How long has Comic-Con been around?
Since like the... I don't know. 80s? 70s?
Okay, but what kind of reputation did it... Has it always been like a newsbreaker?
No.
Right?
So, it wasn't until very, very recently, and I know I just suddenly sounded very, very sober, because this is one of the things where I'm just like, no, and let me tell you why.
You went from, like, white girl to, like, well, hold on a second, sir, blah, 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 blah.
Yes. So, San Diego Comic-Con, I would say around the early 2010s. I'd actually probably say when around the time Twilight started doing panels at Comic-Con.
See...
was a big, big turning point because it used to be very, very comics heavy.
Yeah.
And it, obviously, Sandy, Comic-Con.
I was there when Heroes premiered. It felt like that kind of shit was breaking news at the time. It was like, holy fuck, we're showing the premiere in a fucking hall?
And even in 99, like even in this kind of instance where it's like your premiere, you're featuring a trailer and you're debuting it, but it's not the same. This is like... primo, like, nerd and pop culture.
Yeah, comic. It's like mostly about comic shit.
It's mostly about comics. It's mostly about, it's all about pop culture and, like, nerd culture, right? But then slowly in, like, the 2010s, I'm going to say, like, they slowly started integrating more nerdy, like, and sci-fi, like, TV shows and, like, movies. And then they started getting, like, the bigger names.
Yeah.
And then in 2012 or 11, I want to say, they did a panel for Twilight, for one of the Twilight movies.
Hmm.
And that all hell broke loose, because that's when people really started laying into the caveat. And people have been doing that for a while.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until people... But, like, this is when, like, you're thinking, like, hordes of teenage girls who were, like, camping out overnight. And it's a ton of them. And so that's when it kind of started becoming more and more of a thing.
See, I feel like... But the Marvel stuff with Iron Man and, like, 08 and, like... Wasn't that pretty prominently featured in Comic-Con?
It was.
Because I remember I was on ComingSoon.net. I was, like, on all these, like,
right,
announcements.
No, but it was there, and it was, like, popular, but it's nowhere near to the level that it was.
You know what? That's a good point, though. I remember going in 06, and I was able to get around and do everything pretty easily.
Right, and same thing for me. Like, for most of the panels that I wanted to go to, even when I went in 2011?
Yeah.
Like, I was able to walk around. I had a one-day pass, and I was able to walk into all the panels that I wanted to walk into.
That's how it was in 06,
like, yeah, I had to wait in line for a little bit for some of them, but I was in the back, but I wasn't trying to be super up close because I didn't really care at that point.
Yeah.
But, like, one of the first years I went, like, 2010, 2011. I was able to just walk in for a lot of them, which, like, now you absolutely cannot do that.
No, you got to plan a whole vacation around Comic-Con.
Absolutely.
And see half the shit. There's no fast pass for Comic-Con.
Yeah, exactly. There is no fast pass for Comic-Con.
Great idea, though. I would love that.
Dude, but here's the thing. It's like, people are so dedicated to going every single year that it does not, like, they could do that and people would pay whatever it costs.
Oh, they would. They absolutely would.
Like, literally, they could charge, like, $5,000 for that, and it would sell out in an instant, which is crazy. But then it turns into a whole accessibility thing where it's like, okay, the more money you have, the better experience you're going to have, which, like, goes for a lot of things, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of a fucked up thing.
It's adding kind of an unnecessary layer to it right now.
Right. Well, it's 4 days of the whole year. Versus something like we're joking about Express Pass for Hollywood for horror nights, but, like, that's every night.
Yeah, for like 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Good point. All right. The Fast Pass idea is a little cruel. It's a little cruel. We'll avoid that for now because the space should be more easily accessible.
But here's the thing. I mean, what you said was a great idea in, like, the capitalist sense. Like, they could make a shit ton of money.
I know. Yeah, you know how I feel about the poors.
Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah, not necessarily. Just extort them.
Right. Extort them for every fucking penny.
Especially anyway. For things they care about.
Yes, yeah. For sure. Yeah. Sorry for my Comic-Con tangent, but you got me on my soapbox.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. And my soapbox is hating on poors, despite being a former poor.
Right.
Actually, most kind of a current poor.
I was going to say, technically, we're technically lower middle class.
No, yeah, definitely lower middle class, but, like, I hang on to the middle part.
We gotta hold on to it.
It's like, some people...
You're holding on to it better than the rest of us. At least you have roommates, like...
yeah, you know what, my situation is somewhat manageable, but again, you know, it's one of those scenarios where there's some people that they climb the mountain and they kick the ladder down ahead. People come
sure.
in.
Yeah, you just set it on fire.
Yeah. No, I pull it up.
Yeah.
No, I wave it. Yeah, I wave the ladder and like it's like, you almost got it. And then I pull it back up again. Yeah, it's really fun.
Really isolated. It's a really isolating sentence, Anthony. I'm really gonna cut this out and just be like, listen to how much Anthony Fuentes is openly admitting how much he hates poor people.
Yeah. Not all. Like a lot of them, okay.
You're such a dick. You prick. We're going to continue before you get this podcast shut down.
I know, right?
People who are listening, someone's listening for the first time, they're going to post this on TikTok. We're going to get canceled. It's going to suck.
Dude, you give me these British names that I keep repeating over here. The colonizer mindset just comes out.
No! Not your white side.
I know. It's such a small part of me, too. So, to promote...
I know. What's your... No, this is mine.
Oh, is that... No.
Oh, no, it's yours.
Yeah, that's mine. Yeah, no, I'm going in.
Oh, okay. I was going to be like, what's your white alter ego?
No, your white side came and was like, no, brown boy. This is part of my pie. Your pie's done.
Shut up.
One part. Let's try to get back. Okay, so.
Oh, God.
To promote Sleepy Hollow, Paramount Pictures featured the film. Yes, you did say that. My God.
No, you said... Oh, no. Okay, never mind. I'm going to have to re-listen to this because we are a little high. But you definitely read it. And then we were talking about Comic-Con, and then you asked about Comic-Con, and then I went on to a tangent about Comic-Con, and then we found our way back here. And then I stepped in to continue reading.
Yes.
But because normally I do release and reception, which is why I was like, oh, this is
my
part.
That's right, you went with the instinct.
I went with my instinct of doing release and reception. I see, I'm not racist.
No, it's okay.
It's just my nature.
And me, as usual, misreading. Horribly. Just like I'm probably misreading the outlook on, you know, the poors and their contributions.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, I wouldn't know. I'm just a filthy white person.
Filthy. It's great. So the following October, the studio launched a website, which Variety described as being the most ambitious online launch of a motion picture to date. Good old AOL dial-up. As much as AOL dial-up could afford at the time.
Right. Well, read this and we'll talk about it because it's so cute.
Of course. Now, the site SleepyHollowMovie.com offered visitors live video chats with several of the filmmakers hosted by Yahoo Movies and enabled them to send postcards, view photos, trailers, and a 6-minute behind-the-scenes featurette. Oh, my Lord. How much bandwidth did that take?
All of it.
Everything, right?
How many floppy disks?
All the people visiting Sleepy Hollow website that actually did all the features took, I would say, 70% of the world's bandwidth.
For sure.
Just for this promotional campaign. So, extensive tours of 10 sets were offered where visitors were able to roam around photographs, including the set for the entire town of Sleepy Hollow, forest, church, graveyard, and covered bridge. All of this sounds so whimsical, but in 1999, it was a really big deal. You couldn't just... Somebody didn't just shit this out in the morning to try
right.
to get karma
you can't
points.
Just like, right, you can't just like... karma point of shit.
Yeah, no, they didn't care about that. Paid for it.
Well, like, it just... This is so late 90s to me. Yeah. And, like, early 2000s, where it's like, we have, like, featurettes and interactive photographs where you can click through Sleepy Hollow yourself. And it's just so silly.
It's like, we spent all this money on these DVD special features. People are still watching VHSs. We gotta put them somewhere.
Right. And she's like, let's put them on the net?
On the net, yes. on the World Wide Web it goes!
Onto the World Wide Web.
Onto the World Wide Web. Oh, boy. So, Sleepy Hollow was released in the United States on November 19th, 1999, in 3,069 theaters.
Nice.
Yeah, mostly locations. Grossing $30,060,467 in its opening weekend. Did I do that good?
You did so good.
I did so good. All right. So Sleepy Hollow eventually earned... You're just slapping numbers in my face.
Honestly, I was anticipating reading this. I was not anticipating either of us to be high, to be fair.
Let's see if it helps. 101,060,340 bucks, which is, of course, the currency at the time in America.
And did you say the beginning of that sentence, or did you jump straight to the number?
Sleepy Hollow eventually earned, and I said the number, in domestic gross. Forgot to add that caveat. That was local money. But it earned an additional, of course, 106 million in foreign sales, coming to a worldwide total of, $207,068,340.
Woo!
Yeah.
Well, good job.
Buckaroos.
You did so good.
I did. Yay, numbers. Okay, my brain hurts. Now, Rotten Tomatoes reports 70% of critics gave the film a positive review based on 123 reviews with an average rating of 6.3 out of 10. A lot of numbers. That's blah, blah, blah. Of course, I mess up the words. That cites critics' consensus states... Quote, it isn't Tim Burton's best work, but Sleepy Hollow entertains with its stunning visuals and creepy atmosphere. Okay, I can give it to you. That's actually correct. So Roger Ebert praised Johnny Depp's performance and Tim Burton's methods of visual design. Quote, Johnny Depp is an actor able to disappear into characters. Ebert continued, never more readily than in one of Burton's films. He did like the duo quite. I think I was watching at the movies around this time.
Oh, okay.
I remember the thumbs up and thumbs down and all that shit.
Cute.
Oh, fucking Glaberman!
When I saw him, I was like, oh.
Oh, I gotta include gotta. Yeah. Owen Glaberman from Entertainment Weekly wrote, Sleepy Hollow is, quote, a choppily plotted crowd pleaser that lacks the seductive freakazoid alchemy of Burton's best work. And that's why we say Glaber, because this guy is...
He's such a hater.
He's a bit of a hater, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of a hater.
Glaberman.
Yeah, Glaberman compared the film to The Mummy and said, you bitch. It feels like every high-powered action climax of the last 10 years. Personally, I'd rather see Burton so intoxicated by a movie that he lost his head. Oh, he thought he was so
yeah, clever. So witty.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Glaberman.
Dude, he's like, I'd rather see Burton so intoxicated by a movie that he loses head.
Am I funny?
Yeah.
Am I funny?
Yeah, put that in the headline.
Yeah.
God, fucking... I think we gotta use more Glaberman. I like talking shit on this guy. So, on Letterboxd, Sleepy Hollow has a 3.5 out of 5 stars out of a really high amount. 138.
You're like not even bothering. You're like a lot.
Shit, that's a good amount. So, one of the more popular picks for the horrible people. All right. Now, Maria, with 3.5 stars, says, I relate to Johnny Depp's character because I, too, am a dramatic little bitch. So, 5 stars from Letterboxd user Nidanesi.
Not an Essie.
Breathtaking, funny, atmospheric. This movie is my ride or die. My favorite part is when blood spatters onto Johnny Depp's face and he gets annoyed.
It's true. It's a funny bit.
Yeah. Johnny Depp is full of it's whimsical.
He's
full of whimsy and weirdness in this one. And of course, finally, Brian Helena says, so no head, and 3.5 stars.
Now, you see, elder millennials, do you get this joke?
Nope.
Damn it.
Please explain.
So you see,
the olds.
Right, I was going to say, so you see olds. you were on Vine, right?
Nope.
You see olds, before TikTok, there was this thing called Vine.
I vaguely remember Vine because they would share the Vines on Imgur and then on Reddit. Yeah, I got Vine by proxy.
That sucks for
Vine
you.
Vine by proxy.
Wow, yeah. You missed out. It was a short-lived internet, it was a short-lived app where you could record 6-second loops, and it was really funny, and it was a precursor to TikTok as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really funny Vine where a guy is, like, on his phone.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, so no head, and throws his phone down and stomps on a skateboard.
Okay, I've actually seen that before.
You've seen it referenced, and it's a joke, and it's like part of internet colloquialism.
Now I remember this.
It's a funny thing for anyone who's over the age of 35 who's probably just like, what?
So no what?
So no head? It's a funny joke.
Oh, no, yeah. Good reference.
Fuck you. No. No.
Oh, sorry.
Don't placate me.
I'm definitely pushing the oldness.
Don't placate me.
Yeah, I got a hair appointment coming up.
Well, I mean, no, it's funny because I was thinking about this. I was like, I feel like I'm at a weird, like, in-between because, like, I remember a lot.
Yes.
For being a millennial. Mm-hmm. But then also, like, there's a lot of, like, Gen Z shit that I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm familiar with what the kids know.
Well, your transition. You're either the youngest millennial or you're the oldest Gen Z.
It truly depends on what chart you're looking at.
You're within, I think, there's like a common 3 or 5 years that everybody's always arguing over. And you're right there.
It's 94 to 96.
Yeah, you're literally right in the middle of that.
Yeah. So depending on who, most charts though, like, will say I'm like at the the last millennial.
Oh, the last millennial.
It's like the last samurai.
That's exactly what I was thinking. The Tom Cruise generation right there. Oh, it's perfect.
It's like the last summer.
Again, less appropriation, though. Yeah. Yeah, not as much appropriation as that one.
So, I get to, how do you do, fellow kids, to the Gen Zers and understand the references, but I can't use them properly.
You're the future politician that binds both generations.
I hope not. Yeah. I shouldn't be involved in politics. I've said some weird
shit. We need you. No, very incriminating stuff on this podcast.
Yeah, super,
sure.
Super. Yeah.
Definitely would ruin some time in office. But they gotta listen to the whole thing. So if you want
to listen.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Go back.
Some poor intern is like gonna be like, no, you have to listen to every single episode of this podcast so we can find some incriminating things.
Get a bunch of them to do it. Add those clicks, baby. Let's try to get us.
Those are rookie numbers. Yeah. Let's bump them up. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes or Spotify.
Yes, exactly. So more people can try to find more incriminating stuff.
Right.
Through the exposure.
Because I'm totally running for office.
Yeah, exactly. As the savior of two generations.
For sure. Absolutely not. Keep it moving. Finish this out so we can talk about this movie.
Sleepy Hollow was nominated for 3 Academy Awards for Best Art Direction, Best Cinematography, and Best Costume Design, winning the Oscar for Best Art Direction. And our poor boy costume designer, what was his name?
The costume designer.
He's the creature effects.
Yeah, he was practical effects.
Oh my god, he didn't get one nomination for this shit?
He did not.
Oh.
Yeah, that sucks.
So they took the movie from him, it was a huge success under somebody else's lens, and everyone else won awards.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Sure did.
What's he doing now? Is he okay?
Although, to be fair, the Hollywood Makeup Artist and Hairstylist Guild Awards, Sleepy Hollow was nominated for Best Character Makeup, and it did win.
Okay,
it won. So Kevin Yeager did win that.
Kevin Yeager got one of the awards.
Yes.
Okay, way to go, buddy.
And then for the accolade section on Wikipedia for this movie is lengthy.
Yeah, okay. But as long as Yeager got some acknowledgement,
He did get some, yes.
Okay.
I'm looking at the satellite awards. Nope. Okay, yeah, he's not in there. But yes, he was named in that award.
For a very, very specific award nominee. Yeah,
hey,
there you go.
It's still in the accolades, the accolades section for this movie.
So. Perfect. All right. Way to go, buddy. You did it.
You did it.
You did it. Thank you.
No, wait. Wrong movie.
Shall we discuss Sleepy Hollow?
Let's dive right in. And kicking it off, Anthony.
Hey.
What are your thoughts on Sleepy Hollow, 1999?
Oh, I'm biased because I love this movie.
I think most people, if you watch it as a child, which you should because it's, blood notwithstanding, it's a relatively child-appropriate horror film.
Yeah, aside like the autopsy stuff. And
whatever.
But I agree.
I mean, it's like a teenager, tween. I would say it's a tween-ish.
I think it's stylized enough where it's like not... It doesn't really look realistic, but it still looks realistic enough.
Yeah, it's stylized. Yes, I agree. I'm sorry, I'm totally stomping all over your thoughts.
Oh, no. Again, bias. I love the director, obviously Tim Burton. He's a childhood staple of mine. I've always just loved his movies. Mm-hmm. I was obsessed when I was a kid. and this continued that fascination well into like my teenage years. Mm-hmm. It's just a good movie. I love it. It is, but purely like just a nostalgia thing. It's hard for me to be objective about this movie.
Yeah.
Even though I feel like, okay, the pacing could be a little bit much. I don't think there's always something happening. Sometimes,
you should want that in a movie. Mm-hmm. You should want stuff to be happening in your movies.
There's some, you know, the acting's either really good or a little wooden. Mm. So that's kind of the one thing. Like Christina Ricci seems wooden as fuck in this movie.
And she didn't give a fuck.
Yeah, she was just kind of collecting her shit. Nah, I wouldn't say that much. She put the accent on. But like, I don't know. I can see.
She was focusing so hard on the accent.
Yeah.
She couldn't think of anything else.
She couldn't emote in too many other ways. No. For sure. For sure. Yeah.
Well, also, you know, as you know, English people can't emote.
Yeah, no. They're physically incapable.
Physically, right.
Yeah. Yeah, their faces just don't contort in a way that shows proper emotion.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Because they're all, you know.
Yeah. They're pretty poor, too.
Just.
Except, you know, the ones with the crowns.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, that's for a whole other thing. Yeah. A whole other list of reasons.
Yeah, for real. But no, this there's just something good about this movie. Like, yeah. I think it you're right, it's an all-ages, not all ages, but like a lot of ages.
What is
you can start pretty young.
What is this movie rated? Hold on.
Pretty sure it's R, no?
Sleepy Hollow. Mm-hmm. Google will tell us, maybe, question mark, rating?
Yeah, definitely a movie for adolescents.
Oh, it is very much. It's rated R.
Mm-hmm. Because it's gory as fuck.
I am desensitized as hell.
We are both desensitized for sure. But then again, you know, I saw a lot of shit back in the day. Sure. So this really was like nothing.
That's the thing. Like, I saw this too. It's like I don't want to say like a young kid, but I definitely saw it as a teenager.
Yeah. Well, I think the storytelling itself is whimsical. Like, it really does feel like a PG-13 movie that's bloody as fuck.
Even the very beginning when you, like, see the scarecrow and it almost has, like the Nightmare Before Christmas, like pumpkin-esque-ness to it. I'm like, this is whimsy. There is some whimsy here.
Oh, and also, I forgot, this is my other favorite Danny Elfman soundtrack.
Sleepy Hollow.
Because I used to, when I had that YouTube channel when I was a kid, when YouTube first started, before it was bought up by Google, I would edit game trailers to all kinds of movie songs, and I used Sleepy Hollow.
You did?
I used Sleepy Hollow. I forget.
I didn't know this about you, Anthony.
Yeah, I used to edit, like, game stuff, and then I had, like, 400,000 views or something back in the day.
Wow.
I know. Little me in the early days of YouTube.
Wow.
On Windows Movie Maker.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, Windows Movie Maker. And then I think it was one of my Naruto videos. That was a total, like, using the Sleepy Hollow soundtrack.
You're taking me back to places I'd rather not go.
Oh, it was a time. It was a time as a dorky teen.
Oh.
Like, the dorkiest teen.
Yeah. Dorky teen. No, but just to be a dorky teenager in a broke family.
Yes. With the cheapest computer you can get at Best Buy.
Yeah, with a cheap computer and Windows Movie Maker, all things are possible.
And Sleepy Hollow on DVD playing on your Xbox 360 right next to you. Bam. What a time.
Heaven. Heaven.
Mm-hmm. Or was it the Xbox? I can't remember. Could have been an actual DVD player we bought, which is fucking weird.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, fantastic movie. Again, I'm biased, but I'm going to wear it on my sleeve for this time. It's just good.
I mean, at least you can admit it.
Yeah. And visually. One of his best to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, like, the vibes. Like, in the same way that, like, I love Over the Garden Wall for October, oh my God, just because, yeah. Like, it just has this, like, nostalgic for a place you've never been vibe
yes,
to
definitely,
it.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
Like, Sleepy Hollow is the same thing for me. Like, it's just, like, I don't want to actually live in this time period, but I would go there in a fucking heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, it's just, like, oh, it's just cozy. There's something cozy about it.
Man, Over the Garden Wall, that's a very good comparison. Because they both feel like Americana in some ways, too.
Yeah.
Both of them. Like, something about it just feels very, like this is a distinctly us experience.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
How about you, though? Sleepy Hollow.
I haven't seen this movie in many, 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 many years. Like, I think I only watched it, like, once or twice as a teenager.
Oh, okay.
But this wasn't, like, a regular, like, watch for me. Like, this was kind of up there for me, which it might sound a little weird to say, but bear with me here. But, like, in the, like, dark, American tale genre of movies from mm-hmm. like this was up here with, like, it was like this and like Brothers Grimm.
Yeah, okay. Man, that is a stretch, because Brothers Grimm was like a little later on.
It was, but yeah. But remember in the age in which I grew up.
Yeah, exactly. Because this wasn't like new to you.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So but I had them both on DVD.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah, they would be next to each other.
So they would be next
to each other.
And if you were categorizing them by genre, you'd put them next to each other, there. Right?
Right next to Van Helsing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Jackie Jackman, Johnny Depp, and that bitch next to Matt Damon.
Yeah. Like, exactly. So Heath Ledger. So yes, exactly. So put these like those three together, and like that, and that was the child appropriate horror that I was.
Oh, this is the bloodiest one of all of them,
for sure.
Yeah.
So I have a very fond attachment to this movie for sure, but I didn't like, my parents weren't necessarily like, watch this movie, we think you'll like it. This was like, I had to seek out my weird shit as a child. So.
Oh, interesting.
Or as a teenager, at least.
No, this is a family watch. Oh, huh. Sleepy Hollow's on.
Whoever's Gather in the kitchen. Around.
Yeah. It wouldn't even be like...
That is so wild to me.
Well, it would come on TV a lot. And I also distinctly remember...
I can
remember,
see that.
It is one of those movies that my family has that, like, if it's on TBS or something,
mm-hmm.
it's just going to be on. And whoever's filtering in and out of the living room area usually stops for a spell. And so they got to do something. And they're like, oh, fuck, I missed, like, the third. But we've seen it... so many times
that,
like,
you know,
we already know what's gonna happen,
right?
Yeah,
so. You know how this story ends.
No, this is this is one of those movies.
Again, I love that.
You know, my mom comments on the fucking thing. We were big Burton fans growing mm-hmm. up. We would watch some Burton movies. This is one of them.
I love that.
Right. But we both agree. Okay, good.
Yes, absolutely. No, I was not going to come in here and just be like, this is a bad movie and I don't like it.
I like how you use your voice from the first opening minutes of this podcast.
I hope to God I didn't sound like that. Oh, no. But yeah, there's some slow moments in it, but it's not like a big deal.
It's not a perfect movie for sure.
No, but that's fine. I think Tim Burton had a blast.
Mm, oh yeah, he was just this lathering.
All
up.
That's missing is Helena Bonham Carter.
So close.
Mm-hmm. So close. Anyway, continuing on this path, this is Tim Burton's eighth film, and he was fairly established in Hollywood by this point. Thoughts on the development of his style up until this point?
Man, so this kind of does feel like the apex of his style, almost.
For sure.
Because you can tell he tries something a little different with Mars Attacks. But I feel like he wouldn't...
Oh, man, this is the apex, because, oh, shit.
Because after this is, like, Charlie and Chocolate Factory, Big Fish, like,
after
all that
this,
stuff, right?
He does Planet of the Apes, and then Big Fish.
Yeah.
And then Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Mm-hmm.
After this is pretty much when he gets, like, bought by Warner Brothers.
Yeah. This is his studio era comes after this, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I was alluding to right there. This does feel like the climax of... Era 1 Tim Burton.
Mm-hmm.
This is it.
Era 1. I like that, which is crazy, because, like, that's 8 movies in the span of what? 15
years? 10 years?
85 to 99?
Yeah.
So 14?
14 years right there. Yeah. And then think about the next 14 years of his career, too. And how it does not call back to this version of himself that made him, like,
not
a household
really.
Name.
Well, no, because after that, he's kind of, like, riding the wave of what made him a household name. Because that's where to be fair, like, 2005, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, that one, I was 10. I was prime audience for that movie.
Yeah.
I don't want to say I loved it, but I watched it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it, too. But it's also one of those things that doesn't 100% capture his style.
No.
Like, it feels...
It definitely has...
toeing the line.
It has the whimsy, but it doesn't have the gritty.
Yeah, that's a good way... Exactly. It has the whimsy, doesn't have the gritty, and... But, I mean, the story doesn't, like, always lend itself to it, but...
There's Corpse Bride, of course, which is obvious. It's very, 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 very Tim Burton-y.
Yeah, that's true.
Then there's Sweeney Todd, Alice in Wonderland, Dark Shadows, Frankenweenie. Yeah, I mean, I would...
It's, like, not the purest form in either of those.
Is he working on anything recently, or is he just, like, slowing down? I think he's slowing down.
He's probably slowing down. I mean, Corpse Bride feels like a not as good Nightmare Before Christmas.
Well...
It's very good, but to me, it's, like, Henry Selick kind of established that style a little more.
That makes sense.
And Burton kind of
used some of it. Okay, that makes sense. Tim Burton slowing down. He's 64.
Yeah. And then what's the other one? The other one that I think sort of calls back to this style a little bit, but took it in a way interesting direction, was Sweeney Todd.
Oh, for sure.
Sweeney Todd was this, but he's like, now let me get really fucking bloody, but also singy.
Well, yeah, now let's do a musical. Well, I believe... Okay, so Sweeney Todd was a pre-existing musical.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you knew that.
I know that, yeah.
Okay. Mm. You're not a musical person, so I had to check.
But I was a big fan of Tim Burton back in the day, and I would say pay attention to news stories, and that's okay. How I learned, was it like, it's not going to be original Danny Elfman songs. It's going to be... I'm like...
It's Stephen Sondheim, though. Like,
exactly. I know. It's
a big fucking deal.
I know.
Sorry.
I'm just translating my, 19-year-old mind.
Sure. No, I get it. It's also, but this is also, 19-year-old me, who's, a huge theater dork, who's just like, But, anyway, I agree. I am in agreement with you on the evolution of his style. And this is a really, I think, a high point for his apex, and then after that it's kind of like a little bit of here, a little bit of there.
Yeah it's sprinkled. It's distilled, I would say, in a lot of parts too, unfortunately. This Disney output,
what you mean, Dumbo?
That and Alice in Wonderland was Disney also.
I believe so. Well, I mean, that would make sense. It's Alice in Wonderland, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Frankenweenie is also Disney.
Exactly. It all feel just a little neutered. Like, just in terms of, his stylistic approach to him.
That would make sense. Mm-hmm. Frankenweenie, I mean, that's just a straight-up kids movie.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I do feel like, now that we're on Burton's style, him topping off this era of his career with, an R-rated but still whimsical movie is kind of fucking cool. Like, that's kind of cool.
It's very on-brand.
Yeah, but he didn't really have a chance to play with blood and guts before. So this is like
the Apes movie looks very dark.
You ever watched it?
No.
It's still very much studio film, but that was actually, I think, our first ever DVD.
Planet of the Apes.
So I've seen it so many, lot.
With Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg and Michael Clark Duncan, I believe, is one of the
movies
as well.
Paul Giamatti.
That's right, Paul
Giamatti. Helena Bonham Carter. Tim Roth is in this shit.
Tim Roth is the villain.
Well, he always plays the villain.
It's a pretty mean fucking villain.
Okay, unless you're watching Lie to Me, in which case he just plays a grouchy old man.
He is a grouchy old ape in this one. It's very, Oh, I'd be interested on your take on it, but it's a total...
And Planet of the Apes?
Planet of the Apes. But man, is it some 2000s shit.
It's who?
It is. It's some 2000s ass shit.
That looks very... It looks like, even just the cover photo, I'm like, I can't see shit. That's very dark.
It's very much like blockbuster. Okay. It feels like a blockbuster for sure. But it does have Burtonisms in it.
Alright.
I want to rewatch it now. I have to see it.
You're welcome.
I have to see it.
There's a lot in Burton's filmography I need to check out. I've been wanting to watch Big Fish for a very long time.
Very beautiful film. That one hits the feels for sure.
Yeah. I've been waiting till I'm like, can I afford to just be emotional and cry after?
Man, I was such a Burton boy. Fuck.
Yeah, you are.
Oh my god, I didn't even realize.
You are a Burton boy.
I'm like, oh yeah, encyclopedically I know exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's move on, shall we?
Let's go.
Is this a horror film to you?
It's a spooky film. It's
I like how you're trying so hard to split hairs. You're like, oh, no.
It's kind of horror-y, but just in its own... It's more like you were saying, Over the Garden Wall. Okay. Like in that same realm of, there's horror aspects to it, but it's not like a traditional horror film in any way possible.
Mm-hmm.
It really feels like just a piece of Americana. It's a fairy tale. It's a spooky, scary fairy tale. It's a scary story.
This is a perfect October movie.
Oh, absolutely. This is one of the October movies for sure. But it's a scary story.
Yes. It is a scary story. It is not a horror film, which I know sounds counterintuitive considering that we're covering it, but
yeah.
I think it... It's an honorary inclusion.
Yeah, it's its own thing, really.
In the same way that Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island. Exactly. It's an honorary inclusion.
But even this take on it, it just feels like it's a take on history. It's a historical feeling piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not boring, but just a part of the culture. I don't know what it is.
No, I agree. Yeah. I am right there with you.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was easy.
Yeah.
Moving along, this is not the A Kill Every 5 Minute slasher, the pretentious slasher film that was originally planned.
Huh.
What do you think that version would look like?
Oh, that'd be fun.
The hyper-aware, pretentious, gratuitous Kill Every 5 Minute slasher version of this.
Okay, so you gotta think, this is the pre-Scream era. So
sure.
It's not going to be as, like, funny or, like, quippy or sharp. It's probably going to be some, like, borderline almost straight-to-DVD looking, like, story-wise.
Yeah.
It would be, like, that not substantive. Well, but it's going to still look kind of good.
Because
that's how Curse of Michael Myers was.
Yes. Well, also, Kevin Yeager just was the director of...
the Hellraiser movie, right?
And Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, tell us from the crypt. That's right. Okay, see, he's got style. It would be like a...
So...
I feel like you definitely get like some... It'd be a good horror movie.
I think...
But it'd be like shitty at the same time.
It's yeah, weird. That's kind of where I'm thinking too.
So bad it's good, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Burton was trying his hardest not to show tits in this movie, but still show tits. That movie would show some tits.
Yeah.
It would be like just bursting out the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Because Burton was close a couple times in this one. He was definitely pushing the boundaries for the teens.
Yes. So, did he direct them, or was he...
He was a director, too.
He directed... Okay, sorry. I misspoke. He was one of the original he did the puppets for Chucky and Child's Play.
Oh, shit.
So, he directed Hellraiser Bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I can't read. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, sorry. I'm like, oh, I didn't know he did that. he did the makeup for Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh, nice.
Did I misread my own stuff? Anyway. Okay, maybe he didn't for... I think he did special effects for something in Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. So... Either way, neither here nor there. But I do think, based on what I've seen from, like... I haven't seen Hellraiser Bloodline in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
But he's able to do, like, big.
Yeah.
If I remember, there's, like, a lot of... Like, it's not my favorite Hellraiser movie, but there's, like, gravitas there. So I have to, you know, give him chops for that. The slasher version, I'm interested in, like traditional slasher rules applying to this movie.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Like,
but I'm also, I don't know if it would become boring.
I was thinking it'd be a bit gratuitous.
You think?
Yeah, and he's got the sword. It's gonna be, you can only see so many decapitations, really. Like, Burton really sprinkled them.
He made them worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, see, like, it would be fun, but not like it brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, like there's really brilliant parts about this movie, and this, I think his version would be absent of them, to be honest with
yeah.
you. But it would be like Hellraiser Bloodline. It'd still be fun.
Mm-hmm.
You'd still dig it. It'd still meet the moment in a way, just in
meet
a very different way.
Meet the moment. I like that.
Yeah, just in a very different kind of schlocky way.
Agreed. All right. You ready?
Yeah, let's go.
As we wrap this up, Anthony Fuentes, how do you accidentally lose your head and curse yourself to a life as a headless horseman?
Oh, shit. Lose my life to a... Curse... How do I lose my head?
Like, how... Yes. In the same way that Christopher Walken's character lost his head in battle, literally.
Oh, my God.
And then...
Well, I'm not losing it in battle, for sure.
Well, I knew that.
Yeah. You know, I've avoided using my elevator at my place because it's one of those old ass 1920s
service elevators.
Yeah, you gotta close it manually.
I think it looks cool.
It looks very cool, but I've avoided using it because it scares the shit out of me. So the one day I have to move something.
So you have sick calves from going up and down those stairs.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My sick skinny calves. But yeah, the one day that I want to move something, like the bed's gotta go. I'm like, okay, cool, we'll get a new bed.
Gotta use the elevator.
Yeah. And it's just big enough that as I'm pushing, just ding. Yeah, there we go.
Then
I haunt my building.
Okay.
As the headless guy that's just in the fucking garbage can.
The headless guy from Unit Redacted.
Yeah. Oh, nobody goes in the corner apartment anymore. Then I'm at Barbara's just like, seeing everybody get sloshed. Yeah, that's me. The headless Mexican of Main Street. That's me.
Great.
Hey, how about you?
Do you ever watch 6 Feet Under?
Nope.
Okay. Are you familiar with the show?
I know it's an HBO accolade-heavy show.
Okay. It is a show about a family of funeral home... Like, it's a family-owned funeral home business.
Nice.
Okay. And the family owns it, and it's a whole thing. Like that, but that's besides the point. In the beginning of every episode of the show, it shows the death of the person that they're tending to.
Oh, that's a cool concept.
It's an accolade-winning show for a reason.
It's HBO.
Mm-hmm. I watched this show way too young because my mom loved 6 Feet Under, and I would be like, "What are you watching?" And she'd be like, "Go to your room." And I would like kind of peek from around the corner. Anyway, one of the ways that this show started, or one of the episodes started, is this woman. I think it actually might be the pilot. I could be wrong though. No, it's not the pilot. Never mind. But this woman is driving down the street in a limo, and she's like having the time of, she's like, "I'm the king of the world," kind of shit.
Yeah.
And she sticks her head out of the sunroof.
Oh my gosh.
And she gets decapitated by a tree branch because she's.
Yeah.
It's very much like a goofy death.
Mm-hmm.
But it's played so seriously in the TV show, and it feels serious.
Like the opposite of Scary Movie.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Like the opposite of Scary Movie, what happens in Scary Movie. And I think that's how I lose
that's
my
you?
Head.
That's it?
I'm just going to have, like, this one moment. I don't know why. Because of that show, I refuse to go near a sunroof with my head.
Wow, that's going to be great.
I refuse. Like, one day, I'm finally just going to be like, no, you know what? I'm going to live a little. And then that's how I lose.
It's going to be wedding day.
Well, now I can't get married.
Yeah,
thanks.
The limo takes you guys off.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you know, it's been so much been happening. It's time.
I need to let this go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And right there, just the one branch. That's it.
Yep. That's mm-hmm. how I lose my head. Thanks, Anthony.
Yeah. Mess up the dress and everything. It's not a white dress, though. It's fine.
No, it's true. If I were ever to get married, it would definitely be like some cool, like, black or goth something cool.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be fun.
But yeah, so that's how I lose my head. Don't know if I'd haunt anyone or how.
No, you haunt the limo service.
You haunt the limo service?
Yeah.
Just like kill other, like kill limo drivers? Like, fuck you!
No, you'd be, where's my spring? Like, God, use the sunroof. Use the sun.
Just like the little, like, just like a weird ghostly bridal figure at this point.
No, they can't see your apparition, but they hear.
You just hear, like,
the influence.
Just
yeah.
Hear, stick your head out the sunroof.
Like, what? Oh, more wine, baby. It's fine. What did you want to do?
Well, then it would just turn into absolute mayhem where it's like, stick your dick in the ice bucket. Nothing bad could happen.
What? I know, right? You get over the headless thing, you're like, what kind of mayhem can I start from this, actually? So this would be great. Tell the driver he has a little dick. Just tell him. Just be like, hey, what's up, no dick? And you're like, what?
I'll take us all out! Yeah. Right off the cliff. Me just like, yes!
I'm getting really good at this.
I like this version of Ghost Me.
Yeah, Ghosty's a little fucker.
Yeah, because Ghost Me has nothing to lose.
Oh, yeah.
The day that I snap and decide I have nothing to lose,
yeah.
I'm turning into a chaos gremlin.
Yeah, you're
going to
haunt limos all for this.
For eternity. Whether or not I'm haunting.
One business. In your fucking half wedding dress, it's all fucked up.
Who gives a shit? Whatever.
I like how we worked our way to that one. That was good.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
That was a fun back and forth until we made a story.
Yeah, figure it out.
And that's the power of improv, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so rate this movie out of 5. Rahs.
I'm going to give it a solid 4 toothy Christopher Walkens for sure. Yeah.
4?
Yeah. Oh, this is, again... I think on actual quality of itself, it's maybe like a 3.5. Like,
okay, yeah. Earlier,
but my nostalgia brain puts it at a solid 4 for me. I just love this movie. I just love it in my heart. I just do.
Fair.
I can't. I'm biased. I said that's for
me. I have cotton mouth. Holy shit.
Mm.
Thanks, Anthony.
Just one hit, huh? You took a pretty big hit.
I took two pretty big hits because I thought, because you were like, oh, it could be clogged up. And I was just like, oh, okay. So I was like pulling because I thought it was. And then I was fighting for my life for 20 minutes.
Yeah,
so.
That's true.
So it was two pretty big hits.
Okay, fine. How many fucking...
Yeah, three and a half.
Three and a half, okay. Yeah,
it's 3.5 for me. Like, it's good. It isn't my favorite. It's not my favorite Tim Burton, but I don't think it's yours either, so.
No, definitely
but,
not.
But, I mean, it's still fun. It is still fun, and I definitely can see myself working this into my annual October repertoire.
Oh, I'm glad we watched it. I really am. Like, it just brought me back, and, there's something... Just to me, it's a special movie for me, despite it definitely not being his best work, but still a very good work, and I think better than a lot of his later half of his career output anyways.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
You're a four, buddy.
Yeah. Also, pleased to announce, Owen Gleiberman is still writing reviews.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Gleiberman? What is he? I want to hear what he says now.
Yeah. He's still writing reviews. He did one on The Menu.
Oh, I don't know shit about The Menu. Okay.
I'm excited. All right, cool. He looks like a Gleiberman.
Does he?
He does.
Okay, I gotta look him up later.
I looked him up earlier to come back to him, and I was just like, oh, I gotta say this before I close out the tab for the end of the
mad
episode.
Mad middle manager energy.
Mad. Consider. Yeah, anyway. Okay, I think that's it for this week. That was Sleepy Hollow from 1999. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Next week, Anthony, would you like to...
Oh, yeah.
To inform the people?
You know what fucking time it is. It's October time, baby. You know what current release franchise is ending.
Ending?
Next week, which...
What do you mean? Ending. Air quotes.
Ending.
It ends.
But did you know there was a time when it was beginning again? Yeah. And one of our favorite directors actually took a shot at it. And... let's say the results are a little mixed.
Dig through the ditches and burn!
Yep, and we're hopefully going to get one of our other frequent guests on there if Rona doesn't take him,
too. I was going to say, hopefully he doesn't get COVID.
Yeah, exactly. And then also, by that point, I'll have watched Halloween Ends. And
yeah, Anthony's going to the premiere of it. Very excited.
And I'm taking that host also.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, fun.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't
know
who go. It is.
I know. I can't go.
It's okay.
I'm going to go see My Chemical Romance, okay? Yeah. I've waited years for this.
And he's
going
to be in L.A. anyway, so
yeah, exactly.
It works out. Yeah.
I've waited. I mean, I'm also going to be in L.A., but we're just going to be...
We all got to meet afterwards then and just have
like a
Fret 62 run and just call
Oh, we should. Yeah, that would be fun.
Okay. We might organize that.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
Wow. Okay.
Look at us.
Okay, let's focus.
Yeah, back to the episode. Anyways.
So next week, you know what time it is. You know what's happening. You know who's going to be on the podcast. So don't even make us say it or even give you a hint because you know what time it is.
Yes, exactly.
And then the week after that, we're going to be in New Orleans.
Man, what in October.
Yeah.
What in October.
So stay tuned for that, because that'll be super fun.
Oh, absolutely.
And then, yeah, I think that's it for this week. If you like what you heard, I would love it, and I know Anthony would too, but I'm speaking for him. If you left us a review on iTunes or Spotify, and if you'd had a couple minutes, if you wrote us a review on iTunes, it helps other people find the podcast. And you guys are fucking awesome for doing it. We have been doing this for so long. Whole podcasts have come and gone.
That's true. We've outlived a lot of our early boys.
Yeah, so we're very happy to be able to continue to do this. And if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROBLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. I am doing not a Law & Order SVU rewatch currently, but an NCIS rewatch. And holy shit, the, like, American, like, imperialism, like, is just very strong. I mean, it's NCIS, so it's all military. So, like, it makes sense. But
yeah. But
the
also,
militarism vibes, I'm just like, wow.
Very hoorah. Very.
Yeah. Well, especially because, like, the main guy, not the main guy, but, like, the leader is an ex-Marine, so it's very hoorah.
Oh, interesting.
I'm like, wow.
right.
But it's still, I mean, it's mostly okay.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. All right.
So that's my current crime procedural rewatch.
Yes. I'm just sharing a lot of memes.
Yeah, as always, just doing his thing. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. And keep your heads.
Yes. Yeah. I can't expand on that. Just, yeah, don't lose your head.
Don't lose your head. Mm-mm. Bye, guys.
Bye.